This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. Let's start 2026 with a hard truth. There's no perfect time to build the future you secretly dream of, and there's no time to waste. With support from a Talkspace therapist, you can make this the year you bravely go out and grab what you need from life, whether that's outer rewards or inner peace. Just go to Talkspace.com to be matched with a licensed online therapist. You can start messaging with your therapist right away and schedule live virtual sessions over video, audio, or chat. Your Talkspace therapist can help you create personalized strategies for making the changes and achieving the goals most important to you. Talkspace accepts most insurance with an average copay of $15, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com and save $80 with code SPACE80. That's SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Really turned me from a fun-loving, sporty person and outgoing person to a complete shell, broken person at the end of it who still lucky to be here today, really. I don't understand how people could not take this seriously as a public health issue. It's no different to cigarettes. It's no different to alcohol.
Today's guest is Mark Kempster. We're going to hear his story of how he got started at the age of 16 with sports betting, but by the end was compulsively gambling all day, every day. Before we dive into his story, I have just one favor to ask from you. There's so many of you that watch this channel regularly, but you haven't yet hit that subscribe button. If you would just do me the brief little favor of checking to see if you're subscribed, it would mean the world to me, and it helps us spread the message that gambling addiction is real. Let's dive into Mark's story. Mark, thank you so much for joining the podcast today and being willing to share your story of gambling addiction.
No, I appreciate it, Rob. I've been watching your videos for a while here in Australia, mate, so really, really looking forward to having a chat to you today.
I appreciate that. So I think we should just dive right into it. I mean, tell us kind of how we ended up talking today. How was your journey with gambling?
A long one. So it's been over a decade now. Like it's been something that's really taken over my life for a fair chunk of my time. I'm 37 now, but fell into a horrible gambling addiction here in Australia when I was in my late teens. Local sport I was playing at the time, local Australian rules football I played here. And it's just, unfortunately, in Australia, we have a shocking gambling culture, and it's through all sporting clubs in Australia, and it's something that a lot of young men get exposed to really early on, and that was the same for me. So, I started gambling when I was 16, 17 years old, and from then on, kind of had it under control, and we're talking early 2000s, this type of time. Once we had sports betting apps start in Australia around the late 2000s, it really got out of control for me. And for the next 10 years, from about 22 till I was 32, lost about $100,000 across that time on a lot of horse racing betting, sports betting as well. And it got to the point where it really ruined my life too. I'm really lucky I'm here today. You know as well, Rob, not everyone gets to get to where we are and is able to speak openly about where they are. A lot of people, end up in the pits of it or end up losing their lives from addictions like this. So managed to work my way out of it, but it took a lot of hard work.
Yeah. I'm interested in diving deeper, but as you said, like gambling does have the highest suicide rate of any addiction. Just today, as of the day we're recording, I put out a video about that fact. It's 1 in 5 problem gamblers will attempt to take their own life during or just following active addiction. It is brutal. But so, as an American, I think that we're kind of newer to the gambling scene. Newer being an interesting word because it's been around for a really long time. But as someone who lived in Sydney for a couple of months, I could tell it was embedded in the culture that it was normal for 16, 17-year-olds to end up in a pokies shop, to end up in a sports betting shop, placing bets at that age. What was your family's relationship to gambling like? Did you grow up in a household that was like pro-gambling?
Not pro-gambling. We're a very heavy sporting-based family. So we grew up loving, I've got pictures of me kicking a football around when I'm 2 years old, and I grew up in a really massive sporting family who loved cricket and football and everything else. So it was kind of that was the outlet to me. We didn't really talk about gambling apart from my mum or my dad having a lotto ticket every now and then. That was really the only thing that happened in our family. But then it was really the culture around sporting clubs in Australia where I got to, because I was probably playing a higher age. I was playing with the men when I was 15, 16 years old. So I was playing in them around all these blokes who were gamblers at the time. So, and not that they ever forced me into it, but it's just this, it's this culture we have of when you go into a club, it's kind of, you play your sport and then afterwards you have a beer and you have a bet. That's kind of what happens here in Australia with a lot of sporting clubs. So yeah, never grew up in it, but always grew up loving sport. And then because of my love of sport was so high, it allowed me to really look at the gambling a bit more, I suppose, when I got to a point where I was able to not legally do it, because I wasn't supposed to do it till I was 18 out here, but had gateways through friends and older friends who would allow me to use different betting accounts that they had when I was younger. So yeah, it's difficult to kind of pinpoint when it really, when the gambling kind of took over for me. I can remember when I was in high school. So we're talking when I was probably between 12 and 15, in year 7, year 8, year 9 type of time, that I was always a person that people would come to for any sporting type of advice or tips, I suppose. And I kind of built a bit of a persona around that, I think, when I was younger. And we have something called the Melbourne Cup here in Australia, which is the biggest, it's like your Kentucky Derby, I suppose. It's the biggest horse race in Australia. So, and it's people, it's like a national, it's not a national holiday, but it is a national holiday because people just have parties and that around it. So I remember when I was 12 or 13 running little sports books at school for people who wanted to have a couple of dollar bets, and I would put the money in like a pool. We'd all pull a horse out of a hat. We'd all have, when someone would win the money basically over his horse won. So even at young age, I had the idea that this would be a fun, it was like a fun social thing to do. And then, yeah, it built up after that across the next 10 to 15 years to, like I said, the point where it really got out of control for me.
Noting that at first, I would imagine that it was pretty fun. At what point did it start to transition for you into something that was maybe that out of control point that you were talking about? Because right in the beginning, you know, it's hard to illustrate that having a couple of bets is going to ruin someone's life, right? In the beginning, it's fun.
And you're right. That's the hard thing about any addiction, is trying to people, a lot of addiction starts as a fun thing for anyone, I presume. It doesn't matter if it's gambling or drugs or alcohol or any type of addiction. It's usually an enjoyment factor that people have with something that then escalates from there. So I really put it down to the starting of, or the introduction of, sports betting apps in Australia. And we were the first real country in the world to really have a massive sports betting online market. And I can definitely see my addiction taking my addiction really progressing once gambling apps came in Australia. So I think from when I've gone back and had a look at some of the things I've done and emails from years ago, I went from having like $10 bets, $20 bets at the pub or the bar, as you call it over there, after footy. But then once we had apps on our phones, I had 10 different gambling company apps on my phone within the first 12 months of them being available. And especially at the start, in here in Australia, just very little regulation or lax regulation. Like you didn't have to verify yourself. You didn't have to prove your identity for 30 days. So you could just basically roll through as many different gambling apps as you wanted to. And I went from having $10 bets at the pub to having 100, 200, 300 a week type of thing. When I was lucky. I started full-time work when I was 18 in hospitality, so in bars and pubs around here in Australia when I was young. So I had a bit of extra income compared to my mates who were going through college at the time. So then that was the real turning point for me. And then it became an addiction so quickly because of the ease of access to having it in my pocket. You've got a casino in your pocket. You've got a bookie in your pocket. Like, it is so easy to get a bet on, and that's what my mind just changed, and I knew it changed at that time. And then went on this 10-year addiction journey after that, and just really turned me from a fun loving sporty person and outgoing person to a complete shell broken person at the end of it, who was still lucky to be here today. Really,
you guys have some really strange laws in Australia. Not that we don't. We have some weird ones too, believe me. But I remember when I was there, like, there was this law in Sydney or New South Wales in general that The bars and pubs had to close at a specific hour because there was like a stint of like alcohol fueled violence. And so they all had to shut, but the casino could stay open and they had an exemption to continue to serve alcohol. So that was a weird one. This 30-day no verification policy makes zero sense to me at all. It just seems like how to squeeze kids for 30 days before they sign up for a different company. But whatever, I'm not a lawmaker. What do I know? With that being said, right, you say following the apps, you end up going on a journey for the next decade of constant gambling, of becoming a shell of the person that you once were. Let's talk through that. What does a day in your life look like when you're in the heat of it, right? What are you doing when you wake up? What are you doing when you go to sleep?
I was just completely fixed by the whole thing. Like, I would wake up probably in the morning. Got up fairly early. I'm a bit of an early riser, so I'd always get up a little bit earlier than my partner, who's been my rock through the whole thing, and we're still together now, which I'm really lucky. But would get up earlier than her and would basically check my phone straight away. And again, literally waking up and having a bookie next to you in bed and looking at your phone first thing in the morning and seeing how your bets have gone overnight, and like having that in your head as soon as you wake up, and the access to it as soon as you wake up is so dangerous. So I would do that, and then I'd probably have a look at what was going on in the States at the time, because I'm a big American sport fan as well. And but I'll be betting on American horse racing because it's in the morning hour time. I'd find anything I could bet on really in the morning. And it wasn't that I was having big bets. My issue really was I was having so many bets, and that was the thing. Like, I would have maybe $20, $30 bets, not really huge bets, but it was the culmination of having 50 of those across a day, in all different areas, which really affected my, like, really, made me lose so much money. So, but yeah, I'd wake up, do that, get myself ready for work, and then while I was either waiting for my partner or driving to work, I'd listen to different podcasts about horse racing. I'd listen to podcasts about sport, but it'd always be filled with, obviously the horse racing ones are all filled with gambling content through them. We have a horrible issue here in Australia, like a disgustingly bad issue with the amount of gambling advertising we have in all sports coverage here in Australia. So you basically, if you, I could listen to half an hour worth of Australian football content on the radio and hear 20 different gambling ads or commercials or promos throughout it. Like, we have something along the lines of nearly 1,000 ads per day on TV for gambling in Australia, which is just like unthinkable, really. It's crazy. And that's during like the news or kids programming or anything. So that's something that we're trying to fix at the moment. But so, like, being in that headspace the whole time, driving to work, listening to it on the way to work. And then at the real depths of my addiction, I was betting through my job at that time. So I'd moved on to working in office, like government work at the time. So I was working in an office building, but we had access to my phone at my desk. So I would sit there pretending to listen to music all day, but I'd be listening to the horse racing channel, and just having little bets under the desk all day. So it was always in my head. I could never get it out of my head. And then it's amazing how quickly it turned me into this angry, vindictive, horrible person to be around. Like, I think people just thought I was just an asshole, I suppose, really. Like, it just that, but didn't, like, I and as you know, Rob, but gamblers, all addicts hide it. They don't want to, until they're ready to speak about it, it's this hidden thing they do in silence. So they try and put a mask on the whole time. And that's what I did for 10 years. And I think the effect that had on me as well, not just the gambling, but the actual mental effect it had for me trying to hide this and lie the whole time about what I was doing and the why I was on my phone so much, and why I needed to have the radio going all the time or things like this, just so I could be aware of what was going on. So it was this whole encompassing thing of just it was all I could think about. It was all I wanted to do. Especially the last 2 years of my life is a complete blur around through my addiction. I had my son was born for 2 years to go in my addiction. He was born, and I don't remember like, I literally don't remember him being in hospital. I don't remember him being born. I don't remember the first couple of years of his life because of what this addiction turned me into. And that's something that's probably now the main thing that I really struggle with. Like, I'm in an awesome spot with my, haven't had a bet in 5 years now, and do a lot of work trying to help people. But that's the thing I really struggle with now, is that I'm going to have to explain to him at some stage that I don't remember him being born. I don't remember him being his first birthday. I don't remember his second birthday because of just the absolute, the way my brain was taken over and the robot it turned me into.
Gambling should never control your life, and with Gamban, it won't. Whether you're struggling to quit gambling or just want to remove the temptations from your life, Gamban is there to block access to all gambling apps and websites, and they'll do it across all your devices. No loopholes, no excuses, just a powerful tool to help you break a bad habit. Take the first step towards recovery today. Download Gamban and make gambling a thing of the past. Learn more at Gamban.com. Yeah, I think that a lot of people that don't have a gambling problem might think, well, he was making $20 bets. How much could it really have added up, right? So what, right? He wasn't betting $100,000, right? That's why I always hate seeing news articles about gambling addiction, because it's always like, gambler loses $400,000. It's not gambler places 400,000 bets, which is a much more accurate and relatable headline. Especially because a lot of people that are watching this that might be struggling probably aren't high rolling it, right? Like, I didn't either. My average bet was probably between $20 and $30. But much like yourself, you just keep making them and making them. And you're sometimes looking at, like, you know, 15 bets active. It's incredible how much it can kind of take up time-wise and mentally. And I'm sorry to hear about that situation where, like, you really just weren't present during the first 2 years of your son's life. But I mean, dude, the work that you're doing now and the fact that you're 5 years clean, we got lots of life ahead of us. So don't forget that. With that being said,
I appreciate that, man. Yeah.
Oh, of course, man. Like, what was it that finally got you to slow down? Was it that you ran out of money? Was it that someone found out about it? Like, walk me through the day that things started to change, or the time period that things started to change.
Yeah, mate. No, so I can go through the whole day, and that's the one thing out of this whole robot state I was in. The last day I gambled, I can remember it vividly. So, like, it was during COVID. So we were lucky, because I'm in Tasmania, so we're that little island off the bottom of Australia that no one really knows about. So I'm right down the bottom of Australia. So, but we were lucky during COVID, pretty much, because a lot of Australia was shut off to each other. That there was all lockdown laws everywhere, and people weren't outside of their houses and like that. But because we were an island, we kind of kept a lot of it out, which was really, really lucky in the sense. So we still had the option to go out to pubs in smaller groups and things like these lines. I've got to stop calling it pubs. Sorry, you don't know what pubs are. Probably most people watching this in America, it's like bars and clubs and places like that we go to here. So, yeah, went there. We had the football grand final here. So I follow Australian rules football. Our grand final, our Super Bowl basically was on that day. But we also had because of the delays in sport in that country, in our country because of COVID, we had the Cox Plate, which is the second biggest horse race in Australia. Every year fell on the same day, which doesn't normally happen. They're normally split up by about 6 weeks. But because of COVID, things got delayed and everything was on the same day. So me, who was massive horse racing better, massive football better, this is all my Christmases that come at once, having both things on the same day and being able to get a group of people together. And that's what I did a lot. I would get a lot of time I would try and get a group of people together to kind of mask my betting, because I wanted people around me who were happy to watch the sport, possibly bet as well. And then it would look like a more social thing. I'm not the one only person there on my phone betting. Everyone else is doing the same thing. So, and I would do that a lot, just trying to hide it from people. So organized a group to go down to the bar, to the sports bar, to watch the horse racing in the afternoon and then the grand final at night time. So got to the bar about midday and started betting from then on. I got there before anyone else, so I could kind of get all my bets on. And by this time, I like what you were saying before about it's these little bets that make a difference. And it's the fact that, like, the state my brain was in at the end of it, I would have possibly have five bets on the same horse, but not remember doing it. Because I bet on the Monday on a horse, on the Tuesday on the horse, forget I've done it. Bet another bet on the Thursday on the horse, forget I've done it. Because in Australia, again, we have 19 to 20 different bookies on our phones. We can have so many bets across all these people, and then you forget what you're doing and you just lose track of the whole thing. So going through my phone and checking how many bets I've already got on, putting more bets on, and then my friends all turned up and we had a fair few drinks watching the horse racing, but ended up losing about $3,000 that day of my own savings money. I got really out of hand that day. I was chasing my losses really badly, and it was the only day I really remember not having the small bets. I was having $100, $200, $500 bets trying to chase my losses that day. And because I think from memory, I had a few expenses I needed to pay at the time. So I probably had a car registration to do and things like that. And so I always tried to make sure I had enough money to cover the little things and not have to borrow too much money. But then it's just this stupid logic that a gambler goes through in their head trying to cover things but also bet at the same time, and I've seen you talk about that in the past as well, Rob. So got to the point, lost about $3,000. This is about 4 or 5 hours after we'd been down there. I was completely drunk at the time after that because I was just so angry and just upset at myself that I'd managed to lose that much money, not really knowing what I was going to do. So then we left down there, went up to my mate's house to watch the football, watch the grand final. Only got about, our football's in 44 quarters, so similar to the NFL, it's in four quarters. Only got to halftime and I was passed out by halftime because I just drank myself stupid in the end because I didn't want to think about what I'd done anymore. And everyone thought it was just funny that I was already passed out, not knowing the damage I was doing to myself mentally. So ended up getting sent home in a taxi, got home, my partner. And by this time, my partner's the love of my life and she's the my absolute rock. And we've been together for 15 years. But at this point, she was she'd had enough. And she's told me now after the fact that she was probably getting ready to leave me at the time because she'd had enough of, not that I was ever, we never had a really horrible, relationship, but it was just the fact I'd become such a moody asshole of a person to be around the whole time, and my son was only two at the time, so she was kind of only really staying around because she didn't want to take my son out of my life at an early age. But so she got home that night. I was passed out, went straight, she put me in bed, but then she had a feeling obviously that something wasn't right, and she'd had this feeling for a long time that the person I'd turned into, that something was going on, and whether that was some type of addiction, an affair, whatever it was. So she thought something was going on with me. So ended up picking up my phone, having a look at all the bets that I'd placed that day, and she just was shocked. Then she just scrolled back through the next 12 months. While I was passed out, she went back through my bank account, had a look at it all because she needed to know what was going on, and then saw how much money I'd lost in the last 12 months, which was probably about $20,000 I lost in that last 12 months of my addiction. And then, next morning woke up, was unaware that she knew this. It was my son's second birthday. So I woke up, we had a people coming around for his birthday that day, family. So she got up probably half an hour after me and I was just lying on the couch because I was horribly hungover. And then, she put it on me that you've got an addiction, Mark. You need to, I know you've got an addiction. And I denied it to start with and said, no, what are you talking about? No, I don't. Leave me alone. I'm hungover. And then she says, no, I know. And then she'd taken screenshots and stuff like that and sent it to herself of what was going on and showed me. And then I fell in a heap. I just completely broke down. And because at this point, I'd known I had an addiction for a good 7 to 8 years by this point, and I'd hidden it for that long. And I just emotionally broke down. I just bawled my eyes out. My nose started bleeding. I was just yelling, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. I'm broken. I don't know what to do. But then, I had to pull myself together because we had people coming around the next hour, and then that was the worst day of my life. The next 24 hours was the worst time of my life. I didn't want to ruin my son. She said, you're not going to ruin your son's birthday. We're going to get through this after this. We're going to have his birthday party. You need to pull yourself together and be capable of talking to people, and then we'll deal with this afterwards. And then that day I was just – stood by the barbecue pretending to cook the barbecue and didn't talk to anyone because I was, if I spoke to anyone, I would have broken down again that day. And then, yeah, had to get my mum up that night and explain to her what was going on. She knew something was going on that day because I was so quiet. So I called her back up after everyone had left and told her to come back up, and again broke down that night. And then got everyone around, who are my close family and my couple of best mates, around the next day to tell them what was going on. And then, yeah, haven't had a bet since that day, which is I am, and I always talk about this in interviews, that I'm someone that's not the normal. A lot of people, or majority of people, do normally relapse at some stage during their addictions, and I'm possibly will do myself at some stage. So I went cold turkey with the whole thing. I stopped betting, got onto Gamblers Anonymous here in Australia, set up a mental health plan. Went to see a psychologist as soon as I could because they got subsidized here in Australia, which was really good. And then, slowly started to get my life back together.
Yeah. Well, I mean, thank you for sharing all of that. It sounds like in your experience then, you kind of had a unique thing where you hit your point that you were willing to, like, kind of consider a change, and then your wife found out at the same exact moment. Is that fair to say?
I knew I had to change for 3 to 4 years, 5 years before. Like this addiction was killing me. Like I knew that I was horribly addicted, but I didn't. I thought that if I ever told someone, that was going to be the end of my life. Really, like I was going to lose everyone around me. Everyone was going to hate me, and that's the reason why I kept it to myself so long. So, looking back at it now, I needed someone to intervene with me, and that I wouldn't have changed. And if my partner didn't intervene that time, I wouldn't be with her now. I wouldn't be seeing my son as regularly as I do. I honestly think that I wouldn't be on this earth now at this time, because I was so far. I had kind of resigned myself to the fact that that was just going to be me, and it was going to kill me at some stage, but I'm just going to keep going because I can't get out of this now. So, I thank her every day that she intervened, and like she saved my life really by intervening that day. Wow.
So, I mean, speaking from the lens of maybe someone that's watching that might not fully grasp what a gambling addiction is, maybe they've gotten this far in because they're just fascinated by your story. I mean, you're saying you realized all these things, that this was going to be your life, that you were struggling with it, that you had this problem. Why wasn't that motivation to stop? Why couldn't you stop before that point? Or why didn't you stop?
A combination of things. Like the actual dopamine effect that it has on your brain really doesn't allow you to stop when you just stop straight away. Like it needs, I think I needed the kick up the bum to say that you need to get yourself right. And I was terrified of losing people in my life. Like I had a horrible fear of losing people around me, and that probably stemmed from some childhood stuff as well, that I was so worried about ever losing relationships around me that I didn't ever want to bring up that I was struggling in any way. And because I was so terrified that I was going to lose my partner or lose my son or lose my family, what they were going to think of me and what my friends were going to think of me. I had a horrible feeling that people were just not going to wanting to be around me, and that would have killed me as well. So like I think that was the driving force for a lot of it. And I think that's what a lot of gamblers do feel, that they have a sense of loneliness and a sense of they're going to be so judged or so so judged that they're not going to be able to recover, and they're going to lose people out of their lives. And I think that's a massive driving factor at the time. But you can't underestimate the effect that the dopamine hit has on people's bodies, and the way your brain craves it if you do fall into an addiction. And that's, you have to really work to retrain your brain. And when you're in the middle of an addiction, you're not thinking logically anyway. You're thinking about when you get the next bet, how you're going to cover that bet, what you're going to bet on, how much money you have for the rest of the week. Like it's just, you're thinking about so many other things that it just doesn't, it doesn't allow you to think logically about getting out of an addiction either.
So it's been around 5 years since that point, and yet you're still here today sharing your story. Why?
Because I don't want other people to fall into the traps that I did. I don't want other people to go through the feelings that I went through. My money's never coming back, and I'm quite happy with that. But I don't want anyone else to have to lose money or to go through the things that I did. So I'm so passionate now about trying to help people. And that's the reason I'm talking to you, Rob. It's the reason I do a lot of radio, I do a lot of TV, I do a lot of podcasts here in Australia talking about the same thing, that this is, I do not want anyone to have to go through the experiences I went through. And that's my absolute driving force at the moment, to try and create as much change, not just here, but anywhere I can in the world, to let people know that they're not alone and there is other people going through it. And you can get out of it. You just, you need to get the help you need to try and do that. But if my story, and I suppose, when I was going through my addiction, you probably felt the same, Rob, is that you do feel quite alone. You don't have anyone to kind of resonate with, I suppose, that's going through the same things as you. And when I look back at my addiction, I really think about that and go, well, I never heard anyone speak like you do or like I do about their addictions and how that can help people as well. So I think that having lived experience stories out in the open and being open and honest about these type of things really helps people as well. So that's a lot of my driving force at the moment.
Yeah, I think that in my experience, when I look back, I didn't really see anyone talking about gambling addiction either, which led me to believe that I wasn't addicted to it. I was just bad at it. And that's kind of something that kept me going for a while. And so that's been a big part of my reasoning for making content as well. Looking forward right now, like, what's the next project that you're going to be working on? What's your next goal to accomplish?
A lot. We've got a lot of change that needs to happen here in Australia. I've worked for a non-for-profit organisation out here called the Alliance of Gambling Reform. So we are really working hard to try and create a lot of change here in Australia, particularly around gambling advertising and inducements to bet. So I'm not sure, you can probably talk about this, Rob, I'm not sure what type of inducement type of things you have to bet with the new sports bookie companies you have in America. Do they send out bonus bets and things like this as well, where they can email you deposit matches and that type of stuff, do they?
Yeah, I would imagine that it's pretty much the same. You might have a higher volume of, like, a track record of volume, but we're definitely kind of mirroring what's over there.
Yeah. Yeah, so we have a horrible issue here where, and a part of my the issue with my addiction was how much I was bombarded with advertising, and inducements. So the last 2 years of my addiction, again, I knew I had a horrible issue and was trying to do something about it. So I would, on all the bookmaker apps I had on my phone, I would use their take a break function. So that was, like, it allowed me the ability to block myself from that particular app for 20 days, 30 days, something like that. So I would do that quite regularly, thinking, no, I've lost too much money this weekend. This is the time I'm going to change. I'm going to block myself for 30 days. I'll be fine after that. And then the issue I had with a lot of, when I was doing that, was every time I was allowed back onto the bookmakers' websites, I would get an email or a text message or a phone call from someone at the company going, hey, welcome back. Here's $200 deposit match we'll put in your account. And when you're an addict, that's just like walking down the street and someone offering you your drug of choice. Like, it's not, what are you, an addict's not going to be able to think around. They're going to go, oh, I'll just have that. I can't not use that. Like, I'm going to make sure I use it. So, and to get people to bet longer. So we have this horrible issue where it's advertised nonstop. I used to get 40 to 50 emails weekly in my inbox from different betting companies offering me promotions. We have VIP customer services where we have people who will call up and make sure that they offer you tickets to the football, tickets to the horse races, tickets to concerts, pretend to be your friend to make sure you bet longer. We have, sort of advertising wise, we have so many issues with the amount of ads. Like I said, there's 1,000 ads on TV every day in Australia that promote gambling, and all the different companies. That's not including social media. It's not including radio or podcasting or influencers, which is a huge issue now. We have a lot of gambling influencers here in Australia, which honestly, I'm surprised I've still got a phone because, I mean, every time I see him, I want to smash my phone because it's just abhorrent, some of the messaging they're putting out, unfortunately. So I basically work with these guys to lobby as much as I can. I spend a lot of time going back and forth between Canberra, where our federal parliament sits here in Australia, and trying to make them understand the absolute how big of an issue this is in the younger generation of Australia. We're at the moment on going down a path where we're going to have a whole generation of young Australians thinking that they have to bet on sport to enjoy it, and if you're not betting on sport, you're the pariah, basically, and you need to be doing it. And that's what they're trying to do with all the advertising inducements. So working really hard to try and get gambling advertising banned, similar to what they did with cigarettes here in Australia. They banned all the advertising for that because they knew it was such a public health issue. I could talk about Australian laws and regulations for hours, mate, but I'm not going to bore you with it all. But that's my main driving force at the moment, to try and create change, because I just don't understand how people could not take this seriously as a public health issue. It's no different to cigarettes. It's no different to alcohol. It addicts people in the same way, and it needs to be treated as such and not be forced in people's faces. And I'm wearing my Knicks hat right now. Like, I'm a massive American sport person, so I listen to a lot of your American content over there, people like Bill Simmons and people like that, and how much it's changed just by listening to the podcast in the last 18 months, the amount of gambling advertising I'm hearing on those podcasts now as well in America. You guys are mirroring us so much from what we've gone through in the last 10 years, but you're like, it's going to be on such a bigger scale given the population you have over there and the amount of issues you're going to have if nothing happens over there as well in terms of your betting and regulations and things. So I'm probably going to be having to do a bit of work over there at some stage as well, I reckon. Trying to push some laws over there. I'll get there at some stage, yeah. So,
Mark, thank you so much for coming on and sharing your story. To anyone in the audience that wants to hear another story of gambling addiction, then check out this video next, and let's keep getting better together one day at a time.